possible, let's at least take a look at the Mamari Chazal. Okay, so look at the Mamari Chazal on page 430. On page 430, Pasuk Gimel, on the very bottom, V'ninvei Haisa Ir G'dela L'Elokim Mahalach Shleish Esimim. It was a very large city. Okay, it was an Ir G'dela L'Elokim. We learned yesterday, two Perushim on the word Elokim. Either it means that it was a mighty city, or it means it was a city which Elokim, the Ribbono Shel Olam, in his eyes, gave it importance. The exact term of the Malbim, who knows how to write better than the Malbim, his last words were, Shehoisa chashuva be'enei Elokim le'ir gedayla ad, to the degree, shelachein chas aleha, he had pity upon it, mehashtisa, from destroying it. Shehoisa chashuva be'enei Elokim. It was choshuv in the eyes of Hashem. And we discussed yesterday, we got into a very long discussion, how the nafkamina between the Mitzudais and the Malbim's first interpretation and the Radak's only interpretation versus the Malbim's second interpretation is major. Is the word Elohim Kodesh or is it Choyl? And the nafkamina is, does the Sofer who writes this in a Navi, does he have to go to Mikvah? Does he have to go to Mikvah before he writes this word Elohim? Does he have to say L'shem Kiddushas Hashem when he writes this word in a Navi? There are a handful of psukim in the Torah where there's also a nafkamina. I think one of the classic is in the beginning of Noach. In Noach, everyone knows that we've changed minhagim. We have a very short aliyah. Vayikra b'shem Hashem. It says there, again, towards the beginning of Noach, it used to be in the olden days, the aliyahs and parshas Noach were spaced out pretty equally. And if you paid attention the last probably 15, 20 years, all of a sudden, we've changed the aliyahs, and we read one aliyah has become very short.
That's
Bereishis. In
Bereishis?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, you're right, in Bereishis. In the Bereishis, right. Why? Because you're not supposed to end off on a, you're not supposed to end off on a bad note. And it says, so therefore the traditional place to end off was Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. So there are two interpretations. There is Rashi and there is the Unkelus. And I don't remember which one. I think Rashi, one of them says, I think Rashi says it means Avoy de Zara, if I'm not mistaken, is that Dor Enosh was the generation when they began to worship idols. But Unkelus says they served Hashem. Vayikra B'Shem Hashem refers to Hashem, the Ribbono Shel Olam. So for some bizarre reason, all the years, it's been tradition to end off the Aliyah, Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. We went with the interpretation of Unkelus. Oz huchalikroi b'shem Hashem. Does that something good or bad? Is shem Hashem the Ribbono Shel Olam or is shem Hashem avod zara? So for all of the years, for probably 100, I don't know the numbers, but for a very long time, we've always ended off the Aliyah with that pasuk. That's how it was printed in all the classic chumashim. And that is according to the interpretation of Unkelus. And for some reason, we've become a new generation. We're smarter. I don't know why we're smarter. And we've decided to follow Rashi. And Rashi says it refers to Avoy de Zara. We've just totally abandoned the Unkelus, which is more basic, I think, than Rashi. And it became a L'shoin. It's not a proper place to conclude. So all of the new chumashim across the board, Art Scroll Beroisham, the Art Scroll Chumash, maybe they set the trend.
That is the reason.
They set the trend. They lean to Rashi. They lean to Rashi in their English translation, not in tradition. Art Scroll is all, they all pride themselves. Their motto is Mesorah. We follow our heritage, our traditions. I have no doubt that everything they do there is done with a lot of the, whatever I know, they know a lot better. I don't have to. That's an understatement. They have teams of. That's one of their milestones. They have. They don't act independently. They have teams of people that work together in every project. And when they don't know, they ask, and they're never embarrassed to admit they made a mistake. Even the biggest critics. There's a blog, a Sfarim blog, that has a lot of not nice things to say about a lot of people. but they one thing I read, they give Art Scroll very, very high praise in that they're the first ones who are willing to admit mistakes and willing to correct mistakes. And every time they have a whole department. There's a whole department. People sit there the whole day. They just collect all the nasty emails. All the nasty emails that come in, and they have to contact the author and the team. I remember Reisman wrote the second volume of Shas. He wrote the Erevin. Erevin. So I remember. He was telling us that when they published Erevin, someone came up to them, and really gave them a very hard time that his pshat in the Gemara is totally wrong. What they wrote in the Aretz scroll, and he says, you're right. It's Taka. You're right. It's wrong. And they corrected it. The next, it was like not just a little thing. It was a significant thing. Okay, they are kohen v'chayina. So I have no doubt if they have chosen to change the end of the aliyah us and no longer conclude us huchal b'shem Hashem, and they know in shul the rule of the Baal Kriya. If you Baal Kriya, there's one rule. It doesn't matter if you're right or wrong. You do whatever it says in the Chumash that the common man has on the table. If you're a big mumche and the word should be azoy, v'yoshfei, and it says in all of the Chumashim, v'yoshfei, what are you looking for trouble? Say v'yoshfei. You do whatever it says in the Chumash. Don't be a wise guy. Don't be a wise guy. So if our...
That's actually a very good example.
Yesh peh. So don't be a wise guy. So
it should be.
Oh, so that's exactly my point. It's a very good question. So maybe when my Pinkus comes here, he's going to give a share for us. Soon, my Pinkus, we're going to ask him. That, remember to ask him that question that one, because he's now in the process. He's a soifer. But his main parnasa is not writing. He doesn't have time to write. He's in the business aspect. He's an importer. He does marketing for shuls. He's involved in all the different areas in the business. He doesn't have time to write. But he told me, I once asked him, he told me on the side, very, very slowly, he's in the middle of writing a Sefer Torah, his own private Sefer Torah, years already. Every once in a while, he has some free time. He sits down, he writes a few psukim. He's almost finished. He's now in the middle of Devarim. He's probably taking 20 years. He's writing it very, very slowly. So we have to ask him that when he wrote, Oz Huchal Likroi B'Shem Hashem, did he write it, did he say L'Shem Kedushas Hashem, or did he not say L'Shem Kedushas Hashem? Did he go to Mikvah, or did he not go to Mikvah before he wrote, Uchal b'shem Hashem. That is a nafkamina right here. We learned. Is it an ear gidayla leilaykim? Is this a shem Hashem, or does this simply mean that it was a mighty city? Mahalach shleishes yamim. Yeah.
Who makes that decision that you stop here and then you change?
Where? That's a very good question. Where did the breaks in the kriya, the shivakum, come from? I don't know the answer to these questions. We should get someone from Art Scroll, an expert, to come and tell us all the chidushim in the siddur. Why they made the many chidushim they made in their siddur? They got a lot of. When they did 25 years ago, when they put out their first English, the classic Art Scroll English siddur, so they did a lot of innovations that were never done before. And they got it. People had what to say. People had a lot of what to say. And there are changes that are still going on. Even something so simple as the Nikudos. So they created at their own expense their own font for everyone knows that the art school has their own font, the Korain Siddur, published recently, that not so long ago. They have also there. They take a lot of pride in their font. And there's a you don't know if you realize how much chokhmah goes into a font. There's enormous science that goes into how you put the letters on the page. Exactly how much space between each letter, how much space between the lines, how much space between the pasuk. You can't even begin to imagine how much psychology, to take the biggest psychologists and the cursive fonts versus what's the other font? I was once reading, because there was once a shas, it's very, very sad, they went out of business, called the Bloom Shas. About 20 years ago, probably no one invested more money in developing a font that should be pleasant to the eyes of the student for the shas, for the Gemara. Mom is just Pasha Gemara. And there's something about it. When you learn a Daf Gemara from the Bloom Shas, you don't even know what I'm talking about, because they went out of business. It's just, I don't know how to describe it. It's just very pleasant. There's something about it. And Oizva Hadar, I don't know if they're font. I don't find it to be as appealing as the Bloom Shas font. It's very subtle, but when you sit for 10 hours a day in front of it, it makes a difference. Okay, there's a lot to this. In any event, who made this? Who did this? Who made the breaks? I have no idea. It's been obviously been going on like this for hundreds of years. Supposedly, there's a legend that there was a Rebbe, a Malami Tinoikos. There is some write up who did it, who did it, and it was accepted. I don't know. I remember I came across a kuntres in Heichal HaSfarim. That's where I saw this kuntres. I mean, there's a store down all the way down on Avenue. I don't know where it is. On Coney Island down, there's a store, store, and it was basically a kuntres. And the kuntres, the person who wrote this kuntres, basically he was arguing every single aliyah is wrong. He was showing with rayos this is not the correct place, and he came up with his own way to break up the seven aliyahs, and he said there's no Messiah, and whatever we're doing is wrong, and this is the correct. And this is the correct, and he had a whole proposal, I thought the same was very bizarre, because what are you crazy? You're going up against the Messiah. I mean, this is what has been accepted. The Zehu, it's too little, too late. This is the way it is. Don't, you're not, who's going to listen to you? Who's going to try to change anything today? But this is interesting, that this Azchuch HaLikrei B'Shem Hashem is something which has changed. It definitely has changed in the last 20 years. And there's, I think, only one other example, and that's in Parashas Truma. In Parashas Truma, where do you stop? At the Menorah? I don't remember. The one of the Aliyahs. Do you stop by the Menorah? Do you stop after the Oroin? That's the only other place. There are only two places in the entire Chumash where, if you'll go to a regular Nusach Ashkenaz or Nusach Sfarad Shul, in some shuls they'll stop here, and in some shuls they'll stop there. Why? Because that's the Chumash that they use. Why do some Chumashim stop here and stop there? I do know these are the only two places in the entire Chamisha Chumshei Torah where you have such an issue. Okay, so is this called Kodesh? Is it not called Kodesh? I do not. That's a very good question. Also, Chalikrei B'Shem Hashem, according to Art Scroll, if the Baal Kriya is not going to stop at that Pasuk, obviously they hold that, they're making a statement that B'Shem Hashem is Choyl, and the Sefer Torah does not need to say L'Shem Kedushas Hashem and does not need to go to Mikvah. Let's see over here, L'Kudei Shas Nabadim. Oh no, that's only because that's universal. That's that. The aliyah really ends. It really ends at the next pasuk. It's because we don't want to start off with Eicha. You want to start off with a regular nigun before you go into Eicha. So we go back one pasuk. Okay, that's during. Everyone does that. I mean, I don't know if everyone does it, but during the weekday. During the weekday, we end where it says Sheni. Where it says Sheni. It's only on Shabbos, since we're in the melody of Eicha, Esa Levadi, Tarechachem, Masachem, Verifchem, we wanna lane that Benigun Eicha, so we go back one pasuk before. Okay, not everyone lanes a Benigun Eicha. The Hasidim don't like this. The Hasidim, their minig is not to add any Avelus into Shabbos. They hold it to be a Zilzul in Kiddusha Shabbos, to lay in the pasuk in the Torah, Benigun Eicha. It's Yehorek Val Yahava for them. You know, we're so used to go to Shul Friday night, they lay in, they say Kabbalah Shabbos in Elit Siyoin. Elit Siyoin, Kabbalah Shabbos is sung in that melody. Not in a Hasidic Shtibel. You go to Hasidic Shtibel, they Yehorek Val Yahava to sing L'chadoidi in the nigun of Elit Siyoin, because their custom, their understanding is that Shabbos is not a zman of avelus. Don't bring avelus into the picture. Contrast that with broyers, okay, on the west side, where there you come to shul Shabbos chazon in your weekday clothing, if they still do that anymore, because there's really very few people left there from the real broyers people. But it used to be, back in the day, in Germany, Shabbos Chazon, you don't wear Big Day Shabbos. Can you imagine such a thing? You wear Big Day Chol. To us, that's almost, it's mind-boggling, such a thing. Right? But today that's not done anywhere. I mean, and even in Breuers, I asked someone who davened, they said there's almost no one really left from the real survivors, you know, the real traditional, they've also assimilated to a very large degree, and it's become much more mainstream. It's a very small minion. There's very few people there left, unfortunately. Maybe it'll be a comeback one day, but... Okay, let's look at the Baim Chazal. On the bottom, V'ninvei pasuk, V'ninvei ha'isa, Ir g'dela l'elokim ha'alech, Shleish ha'siyamim, Tanar v'yosef, V'esresen v'esninvei, Ben kolach, Hi hu'ir ha'gedela. Pasuk in Bereshis, describing all the different cities that were developed in the time of after the Mabel. After the Mabel, the world was conquered by Shem, Chom, and Yefes. And the Pesukim there enumerate all the various cities, all the different nations that developed, the 70 nations that developed from the three sons of Noach. And it says there, the list of cities, Resen. Where is Resen? It's Ben, good morning, Ben Rin, Rin, Ninve, Ben Kolach. And Resen, now then it says he. We once learned this. That's so long ago. This pasuk. He hoir hagedola. Now, if you would ask the average person like me, when it says he hoir hagedola, what is the subject of those three words? I would think it's Resen, right? That's not what I would think. Oh, well, now that we have learned Yoina. And in Yoina, Ninve is called the Hoysa Ir Gidoila Leloikim. So that forces us to change our understanding, the basic understanding of the Pasuk in Bereshis. Resen, first we have to know Resen, Ze Ak Teispain. Michal, you're our resident expert in these things.
I'm going to guess maybe Antioch.
Okay, that's interesting. Turkey, where in Turkey is that? That's one of the major cities in Turkey, right?
Syria or Turkey. It's a major. It features.
Is that around today? My ignorance. Is that around today? At city Antioch, is it in existence today? They know where it is. Is there a modern equivalent? What?
I thought it's in Syria. If I'm correct.
Is there a modern equivalent? Whatever it is. Okay. Ze ak teispoin. He who ir agadoyla. So Chazal tells us, see, we're in good company. Chazal say, Eini yodea. Im ninve, he who ir agadoyla. Im resen ir agadoyla. Which one is the ir agadoyla? Kishu, when it says in the pasuk, V'ninve, ha'isa ir gidayla le'lokim ha'alach shlash yamim, hevi oime ninve hi ho'ir ha'gidayla. So look at that. A pasik in Navi is a perish Rashi on a pasik in Chumash. You can't learn a pasik in Chumash unless you already know Tanakh. Here we learn it, and now we know. It's like yesterday, we learned the daf yesterday, daf yom yesterday. And also like, so you learn, you read these psukim. It says that the Nahor Yoytzei me'Eden. There was a river that went out of Eden. V'shomi pared v'hoya li'arba oroshim. And this Nahor splintered. It splintered into four parts. What are the four rivers? Chidekel, Gichoin,
Pishon
and Pros. Four rivers. Yesterday's daf. Now, question. Okay, that's when it splintered. Question. Make believe you are in jeopardy. What is the name of the main river? Vinohar Yoytzei Me'Eden. There was a river that came out of Eden. And then that river splintered into four rivers. And we know the names of the four rivers. Gichoin, Pishoin, Chidekel, Pros. We know the name of the four. But what's the name of the original branch? Is it the Mississippi River? Is it the Hudson River? What's the name? Anonymous. No name? Elam Shema, right? So if you go ask the average person like me, I don't know. Whoever thought about it? I never thought about it. Who says it needs a name? Rabbi, everything in this world needs a name. There's no such thing as being anonymous. There's no such thing. If it says in the pasuk v'nahar yoytzei me'Eden, it has to have a name. What's the name? And ever think about this? So yesterday's daf. So the Gemara's maskonis. You know what the name is? The name is Pros. That is the name. Even though it says that it's splintered, it doesn't mean it's splintered into four branches. That's not the pshat. Three rivers broke off. It's like you have a big minyan in shul and three breakaway minyanim. There were three breakaway minyanim, but the last one, Pros, remained. Pros was the name of the original river. V'nohar Yoytzei Me'Eden. What's the name of that river? Peros. And it kept on going all the way down. It just so happened that there were three other branches that came out. So it's really amazing. You know, you think that thing's so simple. You learn deeper. Pashup Shat. And here we have such an example. From here we learn that the Ira Gedolah over there in the pasuk there is not Resen, like you would simply understand, but rather refers to Ninveh. In fact, I think Rashi and Chumash says. Rashi and Chumash actually there makes that point, if I'm not mistaken, that in the Ira Gedolah is Ninveh. Yeah.
According to Jastro and Google, Tisfon was an ancient city on the east bank of the Tigris, about 35 kilometers southeast of Baghdad.
Nowhere near Turkey.
It's not Antioch. It was the royal capital of the Persian Empire in the Parthian and Sasanian eras for over 800 years.
Wow, so in the beginning of Mais Liberatius, that time they really traveled far. They traveled all the way down there. That's where they settled. And very, very interesting. Very interesting. All right, now let's go further. We'll probably come back to some things because some of the farshim are intertwined in the later pasukim. Pasuk Dalet. Vayochel yoyna lavoi v'ir. Now we have this word appears many times. Vayochel haschol, he began. Vayochel yoyna, he began. Like lashon of haschola. Mitzudos siyoin says. Miloshoin haschola. I guess the ches and the lamed are the main letters of the shoresh. He began lavoi voir yoim yoimechot, one day. So let's learn very simply that it says in the pasuk before that the span to travel through the city from end to end, or however you're going to go about your travels, is 3 days. It's a mahalach shalosh yamim, which simply means that that to travel doesn't mean that from where he was to get there is 3 days. That's not what, how we're learning. We're learning that once you're already there, if you want to go on a tour of the city and you want to go and visit the entire city, it takes 3 days to walk from end to end or to walk around it. So Yonah began to go and travel to the city of Ir Mahalach Yemechad. He only was there 1 day, only a third of the city. Vayikra vayoymar oid arboim yoim v'ninve nepochas. In 40 days, Ninve will be overturned. Now notice, 1 day is a third, a miut, which is a very fascinating insight here. You know that the largest minority is the third. Why is the largest minority a third? Why is that so in halacha? And this is very significant, a third, because once you get a mashahu more than a third, your opposition is no longer double. When you have a third, think about it, you have a third. So what is, I have an opinion. But my opinion, there are two people there. There are three people in the party. There are three people, right? We have a disagreement. There are three people. So there are three. There's an I. My opinion is to do A, and my partners there. They want to do the opposite. They outnumber me double. Their power is double more than me. But once you get past 33 and a third, then my opponents are no longer double. They may be the majority. It's correct, they're the majority, but they lose the koyach of being double. There's something good about having double more than your opponent.
In the present day, there are certain types of decisions that have to be made by two-thirds.
So what does it mean to majority? That's an abstract term.
It means beyond just a narrow majority.
Right. So what does that mean exactly? So in halacha, this is something in Yeridea, all over Shas, there's a roiv. A roiv is 50.1%. Okay, just a mashahu over the majority. But then there's a principle called a miut. And a miut is only in halacha called the meat until a third. And the lumdis is because until the third, the opposition is double. And once you lose that, even though you still have a majority, it's not the same. Ein edoyme having double against your opponent versus just having a majority against your opponent.
So, I understand if it's four people and one to three, so it's three against one, more than double.
Okay, that's four people. But that's my people. But let's talk about, let's say, ingredients in a product. Or let's talk about something where you can have fractions. Okay, by people, you can't have fractions. In a chanami. But let's say, but in many situations in halacha, there's something called a miut. And a miut is in halacha only called the miut up until a third. Once you get past a third, even though you are, it's less than 50%, that is not called a halachic miut. There's acharei rabin lahatos. There is the rabin, the majority. The majority doesn't necessarily mean that you're a majority against a miut. The term miut usually is used, at least in Chazal, to mean up until a third. Because up until a third, the opposition is double. And when something is double, that is very significant. When you have less than double,
it can be two against one.
Yeah. Right.
No, I don't care. So when four, so it's three.
No,
against
that's people. By people, you are correct.
Ingredients. So ingredients, there's three more of this kind of ingredient than that ingredient. I don't see
it. No, but you're dealing with percentages. You're dealing with a dish. You're dealing with a dish of food.
Right.
And in the dish of food, 33.3% of the food is treif. And 66.6% is kosher. That's different than there being 51% of kosher versus 49% of non-kosher. When you have 51% of kosher and 49% of non-kosher, you have a roiv. Roiv of the ingredient is kosher. When you have 66% of the 66.6%, 67% of the ingredients kosher, then it's not just a roiv, it's
double.
More than a roiv.
It's double.
It's like you say, it's a super majority. In English, in English we say you have different terms, which is not really defined. But in Chazal,
it's a simple majority and a super
majority. It's a roiv where your opposition is a mi'ut. And a mi'ut means whatever you have remaining has double opposite. So here, Yonah is traveling through the city. He has not yet made contact with the majority of the city. He's only gone through one day. The pasuk before tells something very important, that the travel to the city is 3 days. Why is that necessary? Why do we need to know that piece of information? Because of this pasuk. Because this pasuk is telling us that he only made it through one day. That means he only traveled a mi'ut. Two-thirds of the population,
he did not meet,
and they were against him. They were opposed to his political agenda.
But then there's the other opinion, that it's the circumference.
So even the circumference, the same thing.
So
you have to. I assume we're going to be consistent. It means he's going. It means Mahalach Shloisha. Okay, you want to say okay, the entire city. Your whole want to say is that in the previous pasuk he conquered the whole city. You're learning over here pie. We're learning over here to round off pie. That the city is Mahalach Shloisha. You're not traveling through the diameter of the city. It means around the perimeter of the city is 3 days. You only now cut through the city, and the ratio is 3 to 1, round off, 3.14, round down to 3 to 1. So Yonah conquered the entire city. Because if to go around the city is 3 days, to go through the city is 1 day. That means he conquered the whole city. But if you learn like most, it seems here, at least on the page, the Mahalach means that to conquer the diameter of the city is 3 days, and Yonah only traveled 1 day, it means he only met a third of the population. And yet he was successful. And yet, even a miut, they were receptive. Yeah?
It's easier to explain. Let's say, 33. Double of 33 is 66. So if you take 100 minus 33 is 67, there is a double.
Right.
But if you take 34.
No more.
34 minus...
you don't have double.
Is 66. To double, you need 68.
Exactly. So you don't have double.
You don't have.
Exactly. That's exactly the point.
Past the 33.
Exactly. That's right. That's exactly the point.
He was
until percentage-wise, when you're dealing with people, you can't. They're a human being. You can't slice the person. It's not Sodom. We can't cut people up. But we're dealing with percentage-wise. That is why I remember when I learned this Yisoid many, many years ago. It blew my mind. I never appreciated this. I remember that it was like a light bulb went over my head. When I learned this, you say, what does it mean a miut? A miut means your competition is double. You're going up against double. That's very different when you're going up against a majority. If I'm 49, I represent 49% of the population, and I have to conquer 51% of the population. If you're a politician, It's not such a big deal. Maybe you can sway a few people to vote for you. But for every one person who supports me, there are two people out there who oppose me. It's a different ballgame. It's not a matter of just convincing a few people here and there. You got to go convince every one person that likes me, two people hate me. That's not so simple. That in halacha, there is we take that into consideration. It's called a miut. You're outnumbered. You are in a very, very difficult situation where you are outnumbered. Here Yonah is traveling to the city. It says here, these two psukim are juxtaposed. It's a 3-day journey through the city, and Yonah now only went 1 day, and he gave them the message, Vayomar oid arbom yoim v'ninve ne'apachas. You got 40 days. 40 days, the world's going to be destroyed. Let's read another pasuk. Vayaminu anshe ninve melokim. They believed. They were believers. Pretty scary, right? They were believers. How come we take some, that's the whole tine of Yonah. Yonah was horrified that they were so quick to do teshuva when we, unfortunately, we're not so quick to listen. Vayaminu anshe ninve belokim. Vayikru tzoim. And they called for a fast. Okay, so they right away called for a fast. Vayilbishu sakin, they dressed themselves in sackcloth. Migdaylam viad kitanam, from the adults, the little children, and the chazals, even the animals. They even went and they separated the animals should not mate, and the animals should not be fed, and the animals should also suffer. Everyone in society should feel the pain. Okay, now okay. Let's stop a little bit. Okay, let's just do these two seconds together first. Now, before we go further, I want to tell you one very important point. Klal Yisrael, the greatest moment in the history of Klal Yisrael was when? You can say many things. Okay, this is not a good question because you can say there are many, many points. You can say was their greatest moment. But one of their greatest moments, if not their greatest moment, our greatest moment in history of the Klal Yisrael is when Moshe Rabbeinu came to Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim. And he told them, Ki fokad Hashem. Hashem has remembered you. He sees your pain and your suffering, and he's going to redeem you. I don't remember the pasuk off the top of my tongue. And then, how did Klal Yisrael respond? Vayamein ha'om. Vayamein ha'om, ki fokad Hashem, that Hashem has remembered them. Vayamein, I'm not there in that pasuk. Vayamein, ki fokad Hashem. It says there they believe that Yud Kei Vav Kei. Okay, the people believe that Hashem Yud Kei Vav Kei remembered them. Here it says Vayaminu Anshe Ninveh Beilo Kim. Fundamental difference. Let me take a chumash. Actually, just to
it's a good point to focus on.
Yonah was horrified. This is exactly what Yonah was afraid of. Yonah did not want to go on the mission because Yonah knew the people that Nineveh would believe they would do teshuva. And if they would do teshuva, what's going to happen? Then it's going to be a kitroig on Klal Yisrael. How come Klal Yisrael? The Hashem sent us so many Nevi'im and we just don't get it. So here was the moment of horror. This is exactly what he was afraid of. And here, so let's contrast this too. Let's contrast this to Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Klal Yisrael. Hashem prepares Moshe with the simonim, with the dam, the tzaras, and tells them you're gonna have Aaron's gonna help you. Vayelech Moshe goes. He tells his father-in-law. He then goes, Va'achar bohu Moshe v'Aaron. No, I'm sorry. Va'idaber Aaron. Va'yelech Moshe v'Aaron. Va'yasu es kol ziknei b'nei Yisrael. Va'idaber Aaron es kol hadvarim asher diber Hashem al Moshe. Va'yasu oisois le'nei ha'am. Here is the critical moment in Jewish history. This is it. Rabbi Yisrael, this moment is even bigger than Nasa v'Nishma. Okay, this moment is the moment. The moment. Vayamein ha'am. Okay, that's where it all is. Emunah, everything comes down to Emunah. Chavakuk. Bo Chavakuk ve'hemidon alachas. V'tzadik be'munoso yichye. Tayag mitzvahs. Who's able to do tayag mitzvahs? Forget it. Just focus on one thing. And the Masech Demakos. Bo Chavakuk ve'midon alachas v'tzadik be'munoso yichye. And all comes from here. We're all rooted in this moment of truth. Vayamein ha'am. They believed. Vayishmu ki fokad yud kei vav kei. Ki fokad Hashem es b'nei Yisrael v'chi ro'o es anyam vayikdu. The word here used is when they talk about the Ribbono Shel Olam, it is Yud Kei Vav Kei. What is Yud Kei Vav Kei? Midas Harachamim. Here, the moment of truth. Vayaminu Anshe Ninve Beilo Kim. So you see, Yonah, you had nothing to worry about. You had nothing to worry about. Just because the Goyim are Maminim, their emuna is nothing near the emuna of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is Yudke Vavke, the Amuni here is Veninve Be'elokim. Okay, let's look over here at the Mitzudos. Yeah.
I think my brother-in-law told me this word. How did Ninve come about? You go back to Parshas Noach. There's a passage. Noach is Yotzah Hashem. Even as Ninve.
No machloikis.
Yeah, you see, look, call it. And Rashi brings down, Kivin Shorah Asher is born of Shano Nimroi. And I read him a mark of the Nosan.
It's a very beautiful vart, right.
And he went to Nineveh. So you see already the tradition was there.
In Nineveh was established because we don't want to rebel against Hashem.
Right.
Okay, Mr. Rapport is saying something very beautiful. He's saying that the reason why the people of Nineveh were receptive to Teshuvah is because their DNA comes from We do not want to rebel against Hashem. After the Mabel, the nations got together to build the Migdal Bavel. The purpose of the Migdal Bavel was to rebel against the Ribbono Shel Olam. Act of rebellion. Ashur, there was a person by the name of Ashur. I don't want any part of this. I don't want to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm out of here. And he ran away to this part of the world. I guess he ran to Iran. And he established a city called Ashur, Assyria, Iraq. He established Assyria, and it's named after him. So the whole nation is built upon a foundation of loyalty to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And thus, when the Navi comes and says, you're in trouble, you're doing Averos, Hashem is going to destroy you, okay, we have to do teshuvah, because we are built on a foundation of not rebelling against Hashem. It is for this reason the Chazal say that we in our Sifrei Torah today have what's called Ksav Ashuris. Why is it called Ksav Ashuris? It's a script. Now, it's not exactly clear what this means, but to some degree the nation of Ashur, to some degree, contributed to this script. How? I don't know, because, you know, every little ois, it's merumas, and every little letter, tal, talim, shel, halachos, and every koitzah, shel, yu, and every dat, but it's called Ksav Ashuris. It was the script that the Jewish people took with them when they came back from Golos in the time of Ezra, Nehemiah, from Ashur. It was the script that they selected. All Sifrei Torah Mikanu Lahaba should be written in, and no longer shall they be written in Ksav Ivri. Okay, the ancient script. Ksav Ashuris. Now, what does that mean exactly? That means that the Luchos were not written Ksav Ashuris? This is a big topic of discussion. One thing is for sure. The nation of Ashur contributed to the script that we have today in our Sifrei Torah. Why were they given that honor? Because they are a nation that was established, that was built upon a foundation of, we do not want to rebel against Hashem. We have the ultimate respect. If the world is building a Migdal Bavel to rebel, then we don't want any part of it. Okay, so your rapper is saying very good. That's why here, Dafka, they were reset. Let's see over here.
What about the head of the Nineveh?
Chamas. Chamas. We said before, Chamas. Theft. He mala ha'aretz chamas mipnehem. Chamas. Violence. Violence, extortion, theft.
No mabul for them?
Hashem promised he will never bring a mabul.
No local mabul, maybe, yes, but
Hashem said no more mabul. Hashem made a bris. Hashem's word is gold. It's not like us. Hashem says something, Hashem means it.
Mabul international, olam, but local.
It says here, v'ninvei ne'epoches. How is he in ne'epoches?
Maybe like water also.
I'm not likely. Hashem promised no more mabul. In other way, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. It doesn't say how it will be.
Wasn't Ashur
Rishoyim?
Now
they were.
No, but Ashur Rishoyim.
Sancheirif.
Right.
Of course,
right.
They were Rishoyim. They wanted to destroy. They exiled the Aseret Hashvatim.
Right. So,
that's right. I mean, this is happening right now. It was part of the process. And ultimately, they were destroyed. Chazal said ultimately, they were destroyed 120 years from now, from the time of Yonah, they were obliterated off the face of the earth by Nebuchadnezzar. Bavel destroyed Asher. But that's right. They were Rishon. That's right. But in the beginning, it was established. They turned sour. It was established by a person who did not want to rebel against Hashem, and that koyach lingered to the degree where Yonah was able to give them musr and they were receptive, and to the degree that we still have ad hayoyim hazeh, we have in our Sifrei Torah a relic of Ashur. We have a Ksav Ashuris. So there's some redeeming quality. Oh, but they exiled. They exiled the qualities, the Aseres Hashvatim. That's right. They're Asharim. That's right. They're, nothing in life is simple. Everything is complicated. Let's see the Mitzudos Tarnis Tupsig Pasig Dalad and Hey.
We're going to
Pasig Dalad and Hey. Let's see on page 430. Pasig Dalad Vayachel Kishahischil Lovoy Bu'ir Mahalach Yoim Karav Amar. He entered in one day. He did not even make it through the entire city. He began to give out his message. In 40 days, Nineveh will be, Nepochus will be overturned. Ritzon Eloimar, also to answer your question, what kind of destruction will it be? Will it be through water? Will it be through fire and brimstone? They're going to be nuked. Okay, Hashem has his finger on the button. Okay, that doesn't know what it means. They're going to be obliterated like Sidon V'Amor. How did the Mitzvah stuff know this? It must be a Medrash. The word Nepoches, I guess it's used by Sidon V'Amor. We have to see, we have to find the source and why it means that way. Maybe it just means their economy will collapse. People become poor. There will be depression. And people will starve. And they'll be exiled. Or there'll be a war. Another nation will overcome and destroy them. You know, there are always these wars going on. Who knows who will come in? Doesn't say that. It says they're going to be obliterated. It's going to be overturned. Let's see the next Mitzvah, next page. Pasuk Hey in the Mitzvah David on page 433 on the very, very bottom. Be'lo Kim, Ritzon Eloimar, they did Shuva, they heard. Be'elokim Ritzon Eloimar Ba'davar Ha'omer B'Shem Hu Elokim Vayikru Utsaim Hichrizu Yom Tzom. They fasted. Okay, let's see with Rashi. Finally, we're back to a little Rashi. We have Rashi, Miss Rashi. It's gone away. I read the recently almost finished reading, Kama finished the biography of Rav Steinman. It's an amazing biography of Rav Steinman. So after Pesach, he after Yom Tov, he was so happy because he would say to his chavrus in the morning, he would get like 3 o'clock in the morning to learn, soon we're going to be reunited with an old friend we haven't seen in such a long time. And the students, who are you talking about? What are you talking about? The tefillin. Tefillin. He couldn't wait. He missed 7 days of Pesach and Sukkot. No tefillin. He told his chavrus, soon we're going to be reunited. Okay, it was a very big simcha. I know someone that said the same thing. You're going to laugh so hard, and you're not going to live. He says, can't wait until the second day of Iyar. He waits, he yearns. The whole Chodesh Nisan is a beautiful Yom Tov, Gevaldik, the whole Chodesh Nisan. But when it comes the second day of Iyar, his heart is warm. Why? He's reunited with his good old friend, Tachnon. Can't wait for Tachnon. Okay, like I always tell you, just like men. What? You know, take it. It's a chumash. Chumash. Like I told you many times, just like a man has no clue what it's like to suffer the pain of childbirth, a woman has no clue what it's like. The simcha. When you come to shul on a Monday and they give a clap, no tachnun today, no v'hurachum.
Everybody's happy, Rabbi.
Right, the simcha. You say this to a woman. I remember I was once at Shabbos table and they were saying, oh, there was no tachnun. And there was a woman there and she really didn't get it. She could not. What is the great simcha? That a chassan was there and you didn't say tachnun, you didn't say v'hurachum on a Monday. What's Adarabba? You should be so sad. You didn't have an opportunity to say. You see, she doesn't get it.
She
doesn't get it.
She doesn't get it, but she doesn't say
it.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. Right. She doesn't get it. Exactly.
In my shul today, they told Tachnunim here, they didn't hear.
Tashlumin, Tashlumin of the Zion, the 7 days. The 7 days. The 7 days of the Oyla Asriya. Okay, Pasik, we're united with Rashi. Pasik Dalid, Pasik Dalid, Rashi. On page 432, Nepoches. What does it mean the word Nepoches? Necherreves. Rashi learns a very simple term, it means to be destroyed. So the question is, why then didn't the Pasik say the word Necherreves? Why is he using a vague term? The answer is, this is very, very interesting idea. Viloyama, this is in the bracket. So who did Rashi really write this? L'chorinat, or Hagod, Rabbi Avadia. Who's Rabbi Avadia? I have no idea. Viloyama necherebes, ki nepoches meshameh shtei lashones. Ravitov, it does not necessarily mean that it has to be overturned for evil. In 40 days, either it will be good. If you will do teshuvah, then the gezerah ra will be overturned. If you do not do teshuvah, then the city, the brick and wood will be overturned. It's your choice. How will you like the word Ne'apoches to be applied? The translation of the word Ne'apoches of this Nevuah is in your hands. If you do Teshuvah, then the word Ne'apoches means the city will be overturned for good. The Gezerah will be overturned. But if you do not do Teshuvah, then the bricks and the wood and the buildings will be turned upside down. It's all a matter of interpretation. When Eli HaKoyin saw Chana, so the letters on the Urim V'Tumim lit up. And it's a subject to interpretation. And he looked at the letters and he said, Shikoira. The letters lit up, Shikoira. She is intoxicated. She's not normal. She's an addict. She's an alcoholic. That's what he says. And she said to him, you know something? You're not right to be the Kohen Gadol. Because to be the Kohen Gadol, you have to have Ruach HaKodesh. You have to know how to interpret the letters. And that's not what the letters are meant to say. It's Kisara or Kishera. Two different interpretations. Kishera or Kisara is also Mispalo. Vashem Pokad Esara. She's crying for a child. Kisara or Kishera. Not Shikoira. So she gave him the ultimate Musar. There was no woman who gave Musar to a man like Chana. That's why you lay Chana on Rosh Hashanah. You want women's power. The ultimate power of a woman is when she gives Musar to a man and the man has nothing what to say. It's a humiliating, the ultimate humiliating experience. You don't understand something. Today it's no big deal. There are so many married men today. It's no big deal today. What?
The first day also is
oh, very good. You hear what Rav says? Hear what Rav says? The lady also, where do you find in the Torah Musar that a woman overpowers a man? Call the first landing, call Asher Toymar Sarah, Shema B'Koyla. And we don't appreciate this. Because today, you know, today women, we're so afraid of women, we roll out the red carpet for them. Right? But in ancient times, it's not the way it was. A woman didn't open up her mouth in front of a man. Okay? You put the woman in the closet. Okay?
Before Sarah her body.
That's not the way it was. And for a woman to prevail over a man in ancient times, you know what that was? We really, it's almost impossible for us to understand this. And it's a double whammy. On the first day, Rosh Hashanah, call Asher Toymar Sarah Shema B'Koyla. The woman is right. The man is wrong. Chana, she comes to Eli HaKoyen. I mean, it's a humiliating experience. He is the Koyen Gadol. He is the holiest Jew in Klal Yisrael. And she's telling him, you blew it. You blew it. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know. You don't know what's going on over here. You have on your chest the holiest thing in the world, the Urim between the Shem Hashem, and the letters light up, and you're given the responsibility, you're given the achrayus of the Urim Vitumim, and you don't even know what you're doing? It's a pretty humbling experience. and two of these experiences on one day? Wow. It really changes the whole character of Rosh Hashanah. Okay, it's a scary thought.
And it sounds very, very bad.
Okay, so over here we have, over here you have a similar idea, right? Over here in this Chazal, we have over here a Nevuah. A Nevuah is like the Urim V'Tumim. Okay, a Nevuah is just like the Urim V'Tumim. Oz Nepeches, I'll tell you a story, one of the story, a very nice story about that. Oz Nepeches, Alan Shenim Vekoi, Shehovchu Meru'ol L'Toyva V'Yasu Teshuvah. If you'll do tshuva, it'll be good. Now, let me tell you a very beautiful story, something like this. I have a friend that he had a kidney transplant. Okay, he was very, very sick. He was mamish, deathly, deathly ill. It's not a joke. And miracle of miracles, his brother gave him a kidney. And it wasn't so simple. And in the meantime, he went through, if you ever read about renewal, if you ever read about renewal, this organization called Renewal, who they encourage...
I was very much involved with them.
They encourage kids, the mamish tzaddikei oilam, and the lamed vav tzaddikei, from the lamed vav tzaddikim that this world exists on, the people who are involved in this organization, what they do is not to be believed. And this friend of mine, who has a friend, he very, very much wanted to give him a kidney. Very, very much wanted to do so. His mother didn't want. The mother says, "Why? What do you have to give him a kidney? What do you? You're a young guy. You're married. What do you? It's not so simple. What are you doing?" So he said to his mother, "If I'll go and I'll ask Rav Chaim Kinievsky, I'll ask him psak halacha. Will you accept psak halacha from Chaim Kinievsky?" So she said yes. And he seriously discussed it with him. "I accept." So he went to Rav Chaim Kinievsky. And he spoke to him, and Rav Chaim Kinievsky said to him, "Yes, you should do it. You should do it." And then they were continuing the conversation, or I think he went back to him a second time to discuss it more. And then he said to him, he's a very religious person, he said to him, I don't remember every single detail, but he said to him, he seemed to say to him, like, to backtrack. Rav Chaim Kinievsky said to this fellow, who wanted very much to give a kidney, he said to him, he seemed like, he said something very vague to him at the second time. He went to him a second time to clarify some of the issues. And then he said to him, "You should learn. You should learn." He said, at that time, "You should learn." The friend told this to me. I said, "What? What do we learn? Should I give the kidney or not?" And he said to him, "You should learn." He said, at the time of, I don't remember the exact word, he said something very, very vague. At the time of the surgery, "You should learn." And he was very angry. He told me himself, he was very like, "What is going on over here? Yes or no?" He proceeded to prepare to give the kidney. Renewal, he was the guy on renewal. He had to lose 30 pounds. He lost 30 pounds. He had to go on a certain diet. He was all into the process. Now, when they do match kidneys, there's one to be an exact match. They measure it in terms of, I don't know what the criteria are, but they use numbers. Are you a match? A 6 of 6? 5 of 6? 1 of 6? I guess b'shas atchach, they can take a person that only matches is 1 out of 6. Is that these the correct terms?
I don't know.
This person was a 5 out of 6. He wasn't the perfect match, but it's pretty good. 5 out of 6 was pretty good. This fellow's brother was a 6 out of 6. So at the very, very end, renewal, and the doctors decided they want the brother. The brother was 6 out of 6. The brother, there was also a complication with the brother. And they told him, nope. They gave him the phone rang like around a day or two before the surgery was scheduled, and they told him, "You're out. The doctors have rejected you. You cannot live. You're only a 5 out of 6. The brother is 6 out of 6. We've overcome those complications. The brother will be giving the kidney, not you." Now, he was been preparing this for a very, very long time, because they do a lot of things. They even go to psychologists. The whole thing that goes on, and he was very, very disturbed. He was very shaken up. And then it was the day of surgery, and then it hit him that it's now the moment they called him up, now they're doing the surgery, and then it hit him Rav Chaim Kanievsky's words, "You should learn. You should learn." And he realized in his mind, and this is, you know, it's very personal, these type of stories, to some people it means something, some people it means nothing. He realized that, like, he felt that Rav Chaim Kanievsky, he felt, had Ruach HaKodesh, and he told him originally to give the kidney, and then he sensed somehow that there was a better candidate, and he kept on telling him, "You should learn." And he felt that he was telling him now, during the time of surgery, stop working, sit down, and learn a daf gemara, learn as a zechus for your friend. He says he left work, he went to the Beis Medrash, he never had such a learning experience his entire life like that time. He sat in Beis Medrash during the entire couple of hours that his friend was undergoing surgery. So is then I understood, as he said, I understood what Rav Chaim Kanievsky meant. At the time, he told me yes, and then he said to me, "You should learn instead." And I was angry, very angry and bitter. What are you confusing me? And now in hindsight, you have to understand, he there's more details. The way he was telling it to me, every person knows the story is personal, so for them it has a lot more meaning. It's like, I now understood what he said. He said, "No, there's a change of plans. Someone else will be giving the kidney. And instead of giving the kidney, you should devote yourself to learning Torah during the time of surgery as the zuchus for your friend, that the surgery should be successful, the kidney should take, and everything should be okay." It's like over here also. Nepoches! It says there's a prophecy. The prophecy is subject to interpretation. It can mean one thing, it can mean something else. And it's all in your hands what it means. And we don't always understand. And now in hindsight, we understand. Look at the Teichacha. Give you one other quick example. Teichacha, I maybe once mentioned this, it says, all the psukim of the Teichacha, Chazal tell us, are really blessings in disguise. One of the most horrific psukim in the Teichacha is, Va'achaltem espesar b'neichem v'espesar b'neiseichem toichelu. The churban will be so great where you will eat the flesh of your own children. And unfortunately, Chazal said this came true. It's l'mayla m'derech ha-teva. But it's also a blessing in disguise. How is a blessing in disguise? A fellow came to America, two good friends, and Rachmana Litzlan, they both had a number of children. And one friend, all of his children in the beginning of the 20th century, they all went off the Derech Rachmana Litzlan. And the other friend, it was a miracle. Somehow, all of his children remained Shomrei Torah Mitzvos, even up against the most difficult circumstances. So the friend whose children, Rachmana, went off the Derech, when he went to them to visit them, he couldn't eat anything. Because everything was treif. The home was treif. He had to bring his own food. But the friend, the other one whose children were Shomrei Torah Mitzvos, when he went to them for Yom Tov, v'achaltem b'sar b'neichem u'v'sar b'neiseichem toichelu. When he comes to his children's home, when he comes to his son, they put down on the table meat, I can eat it, it's glat kosher. It goes to his son-in-law's, it's even a bigger miracle that his daughter's married Shomrei Torah Mitzvos. I can eat the meat on the table. And it's ringing in his head how the pain that he has for his best friend, that when he goes away to visit his children, he can't eat. He can't eat the meat because his friend was complaining to him, "I can't even eat in the house." And here he goes to his children and he sees, look at that, Hashem gave me a bracha. Besar v'achaltem besar b'neichem. Look at that. Look what a bracha that is. Up against the most difficult circumstances. Come to a country where there's nothing. And yet they're able to remain Shomrei Torah Mitzvos. What a bracha. So look at that. It's the same thing. In 40 days, the city is Nepoches. Is that a klala or a bracha? It's up to you. It's all up to you. It's besar b'neichem toichelu. Besar, you want to get the Eli or not? People are running away from getting the toichacha. They're so afraid. They're so afraid to get the toichacha. Maybe getting the toichacha, they're really getting big brachas in disguise. Who knows? Who knows what's there? All right, we're going to stop over here.